Let's go. Welcome to another episode of the Client Experience Architect Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Hoskins, and it's my passion to guide you through crafting unique experiences for your clients to help you both maximize the value you bring and create a sales force of ranting, raving fans out there promoting your business. It's my pleasure to bring you businesses who are crushing it with intentional experiences and dive into valuable insights that you can implement into your business after listening. Let's dive in. On this episode, I sit down with Jesse Cole, also known as the Yellow Tux Guy, owner of the Savannah, Georgia baseball team known as the Savannah Bananas, author of the book Find Your Yellow Tux, and host of the Business Done Differently podcast. Jesse has explosive positivity and excitement and also is so very humble and grateful. This was an incredibly valuable and impactful conversation for me, and I hope you guys enjoy it just as much as I did. Listen in on my conversation with Jesse Cole. Jesse, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast, and we're on video as well. I just want to appreciate for you for your time and hopping on here with me.
I'm fired up to chat with you, my man.
I love it. So tell me a little bit about your background. For those of you, for those of our listeners who don't really know who you are, can you kind of give us a little bit about your background and kind of where you have come from to where you are today?
Grew up in Massachusetts, fell in love with baseball, played my whole life, and ended up going to college and tore everything in my shoulder. And that ended my baseball career. And so I thought about getting into coaching. And I remember watching a baseball game. I said, wow, I love playing baseball, but I absolutely hate watching baseball. There's a difference. Zach, I may be the only owner, you know, right now I own the Savannah Bananas baseball team, but I might be the only owner that thinks baseball is long, slow, and boring, and it's challenging. But the reality is I realized that. So when I took a job in a little town called Gastonia, North Carolina, and started with only 200 fans coming to the games and $268 in the bank account, I knew we had to change the business that we're in. And so, you know, where we started focused on entertainment, and you know, we did everything. I mean, our players did choreographed dances during the games and grandma beauty pageants. And the one that people really love is the Dig to China night, where we actually buried a trip to China in the infield dirt. And so we gave everyone an opportunity to dig for that trip after the game, dig with their hands. Yet when the person won, they found out that was only a one-way flight to China. We were getting them there, but we weren't getting them back and no accommodation. So we tried it all and had a lot of fun. And what happened is the attendance started climbing and started selling out games, and we bought that team and recently sold that team and came to Savannah. Wow. And it's been a wild ride, as I know you read about, but you know, now we've sold out every game and we are at the lowest level of baseball. Literally, you know, there's Major League, Triple A, Double A, Single A, and then there's like us way below that at some of baseball. But as you know, having the time of our life and excited to connect with you, especially people that focus on the experience, because that is everything. I think the reason our success is because we're focusing on the customer experience and the employee experience.
No doubt. Well, thank you so much for giving us that context. And as people can see, and if you're listening, this man is wearing a bright yellow tux. Can you kind of give us a little bit of background on where the yellow tux came from and kind of why you were still continuing to wear that and kind of some context around that?
Yeah, well, part of my big concept is do and then learn. So, like, I was like, all right, I'm a showman. And at our games, you know, it's not like a baseball game. We're pieing people in the stands. You know, our players are delivering roses in the crowd. We have a breakdancing first base coach. It's a circus. Yeah. And a baseball game breaks out. So, if I'm the one putting on the show, I can't dress like a normal person. And, you know, one of my big beliefs is whatever's normal, do the exact opposite. And so, I knew, I was like, all right, let's get crazy. So it was back 7 years ago that I said, all right, let's wear a big, you know, tuxedo with the tails like a showman.
Sure.
Big P.T. Barnum fan, love P.T. Barnum.
Sure.
Except that first night it was 100 degrees and I almost melted in that black tuxedo. So I looked online and found a yellow tuxedo, a brightcoloredtuxedos.com. It actually exists.
There you go.
For $44.95. Because no one was buying it. I became the only returning customer at brightcoloredtuxedos.com and started wearing it, and it took off. And, you know, what started as kind of just a joke, a fun thing, you know, I became the yellow tux guy. And as I started to realize, you know, this became my uniform. You know, as anybody who plays sports, you know, when you have a uniform, it's game time. Sure. When it's, this is my uniform, for me, it's showtime. So, you know, I realize that this is who I am. And I think every single person has something that makes them stand out. It's their yellow tux. And what I'm so passionate about is helping people find that, because it's the best version of themselves. You don't need to dress like an idiot like me, but what I can do is find that and amplify it all the way. You can tell just talking literally, this is me. I'm energy. I'm crazy. It doesn't make sense, but a lot of the things that I say and do, but that's who I am. And so this, exemplifies it. And I will say this, Zach, that going through the airport, I get the weirdest looks every single day, and TSA checks me. And it's not easy to be your 100% self and kind of, you know, as people say, this is my alter ego, but this is really me. Mm-hmm. I had to get over that fear, because there are many points I'm like, people must think I am crazy. But I was like, you know what? This is it. And so now I wear it every day. I own 7 of them. I've got proposed in the yellow tux, and my wife said yes. I've slept in it before at the ballpark, and it's my lifestyle. So I believe everyone has something that could be their yellow tux that makes them stand out.
Man, it's so incredible. And I love how you said it's your passion to help other people find their yellow tux or find ways to stand out. Can we unpack that a little bit? How did that become a passion of yours? What stirred in your heart or stirred in your belly that said, you know, was it one day that you said, gosh, I have this figured out. I want to help other people figure it out. Or was it, kind of give us a little bit more on that?
Well, two things happened almost simultaneously. And when we were working with the team in Gastonia, North Carolina, I remember vividly one day, and I was driving from our house in Charlotte, which, as you know, we ended up having to sell because Savannah ran out of money, and that was a whole other story. So I was at my dream house, and I'm driving into the ballpark, and I'm coming in, and there's no cars on the road, and I'm going to a ballpark. And then I look at the other side of the road, and it's bumper-to-bumper traffic, people going into Charlotte. Every single day, they're in this bumper-to-bumper traffic. And I'm on the way driving to the ballpark, you know, music, singing, having fun. And I'm like, oh. And I thought about how many people are going through life just the same way over and over and over again, and they're in traffic, and they're bumper to bumper, and they're working the 9 to 5. And I was just like, why is this so amazing? Like, why am I so lucky? And then I got the opportunity to speak at ProfitCon, Mike Michalowicz's event. I got to know him.
Sure.
What do you want to speak about? And I said, we want you to tell your story. And I said, well, all right, well, I'll tell my journey and how, I guess, I found my yellow tux. And I gave it to 300 accountants. I mean, finance people, you know, they're a different breed. They're not like me. They're not crazy. They're by the numbers.
Right.
And I shared the journey and the story and how we were able to get that and, you know, be the best version of themselves. And this group of accountants who I never met before, I was so fortunate. They gave me a standing ovation for a long time. And many of them came over after me and said, you have to write that book. More people need this in their life. Mm. And at that moment I said, I just got to do it. And I was scared. I was like, me write a book? What am I doing? Yeah. And I just put it out there. And I've been fortunate that it's resonated with a lot of people.
Huge, huge stuff. Oh my gosh. All right. I love it. I love the energy. I totally get that. Because, you know, in a world filled with people who are sadly, I mean, there's a book called A Rhinoceros Success, and it talks about charging as a rhinoceros, and you've got the cows over there. And no offense, but there's a 9 to 5 reality that people get stuck in, and that works for some people, but some people like us, it's very difficult, and we need to, you know, share that and share that energy with other people. And I just love connecting with you and another person who feels that way.
No, I appreciate it. You know, it's funny. You know, it looks like when I think about it, I didn't realize this at first, but, you know, I always say love your customers more than you love your product, and love your employees more than you love your customers. Mm-hmm. But I think the last touch, most people don't talk about it. You got to love yourself, and you got to take care of yourself. You got to put yourself in a good spot and have confidence. And that took me a while to get to this point. You know, I wasn't that, everyone's like, oh, how do you do this? I'm like, no, I had to just do it and then see, like, you know what? People need more of this. They need fun. They need energy. And so I started committing to just, you know, putting myself out there every day and sharing the journey and being vulnerable, but also just taking care of myself, you know, starting the day with gratitude. You know, every day I write a thank you letter and I read and I write, and I'm just trying it to make sure I'm in a better spot so then I can be better for others. You can't be a great leader if you're not, you know, taking care of yourself first. And so that's what I hope, you know, the book has been able to do, to get people to, like, you know what? You know, this is how I could be my best version of myself. And I just share my journey. I'm no expert. I'm no psychologist. I don't know any of that.
Yeah.
But I just shared it. And, you know, that was the goal.
I love it.
Good deal. So you talked about a fans first way, like when, you know, that's kind of how you guys operate. Can you unpack that a little bit and kind of spend some time on where that came from and how you maybe implement that into your team as well, so they can kind of, you know, exemplify that when they're, you know, engaging with their fans?
Yeah, I think a challenge is most companies don't know what they stand for. They don't know who they are. They don't know, you know, they might have a mission statement that's on the wall somewhere, but their people don't even know it. They can't recite it. We keep things very, very simple. And what we realized was what we can be the best at is creating a fans first environment, and literally everything we do, putting the fans first. Our mission is simple. It's fans first, entertain always. Like, that's it. Like, yeah. Every time we come to the office, we know, are we doing things that are fans first and entertaining? So, you know, I think what most companies don't do is they don't look at really all the problems and challenges and friction points. I'm a most positive person. You and me, we could talk positivity all the time. But you also have to start from this negative side into a problem aspect to know what you need to fix. And I describe this as the mirror moment. And for us, you know, I didn't know at the time, but baseball was long, slow, and boring. People came to a ballpark. They got nickel and dimed. It was a bad experience.
Yeah.
What would be the opposite of that? Mm. And so that's how, you know, we literally came up with all-you-can-eat tickets that include all the food, all the soda, everything for less than $20 because, you know, people get nickel and dimed at ballparks.
Sure.
And we said, all right. You know, what happens when people show up to the ballpark? What happens when they leave? And you got to map it out. You know, I think so many people, they don't think. When you buy tickets to a concert, what happens? You just get a payment confirmation. Make it fun. You know, when you buy from us, congrats. You just made the best decision of your day. Right now, as you bought your tickets, we ran around the stadium, hoisting them up the air, doing Gatorade showers over each other. Now your tickets are in the vault. They're waiting for you in maximum security. They're ready for you to go bananas. That's the first impression. And then, you know, something that is crazy. To really scale a business, you got to do things that are unscalable. And I learned this from Brian Chesky and how he grew Airbnb. He actually went and took pictures of all the apartments in the beginning of Airbnb. He did it because he wanted to make sure it was a great experience. So what did we start doing? We call every single person that buys a ticket from us and thank them. It sounds like, how do you do that? And it's like, well, we have to spread that out. We actually print out those sheets and spread it out between the staff. And it's my favorite part of the day. I'll get on the phone and start calling people like, you're calling to thank? I go, yeah. Like, that's it. Like, there's nothing else.
Yeah.
And we mapped it out because we thought, what would happen if people got a fun email, they get a thank you call, and they feel appreciated and cared for before they even actually experience the product.
Mm.
But the reality is they already experienced the product.
Yeah.
Most people think they don't experience the product till they actually get it in their hands. They experience your product when they go to the website. They experience your product when they see your social media presence. They experience your product everywhere. And so you can think of all those touch points. So we start there, and then we map it all the way through. And, you know, as I share with you on the book, I mean, we have our pep band out greeting the fans. We have our players signing autographs. Our tickets are shaped like bananas, and they're scratch and sniff and smell like bananas. I mean, it's all part of these touch points.
Yeah.
And then, as I believe, lastly, is the last impression leaves a lasting impression. And people get this right. They think, you know, last time you left a restaurant. I mean, how many times do you leave a restaurant and no one even thanks you?
Yeah.
That is the simplest, easiest touch. Just to have the hostess thanking you, giving you a mint, giving you something, and it doesn't happen. You know, we make sure at the end of our games, we have our players lined up. We have our band playing music. We have a s'more station doing free s'mores. And it's all a part of that last impression. And, you know, we have fun mapping this out. And I think every company should do it.
No doubt, man. I couldn't agree more. That's so exciting. I love that. So you talked about at the beginning, you were doing a lot of things. You were, you know, your time was split between a lot of different activities. You thought you could do it all, those types of things. But then you talked in the book, you realized that you were uniquely qualified to do X. Can you please walk us through that journey and how that relates to a better customer experience or a better fan experience once you decided, hey, I shouldn't be doing this stuff. I'm uniquely qualified for this. That will create a better experience.
I am the worst at so many things. It is unbelievable. You put me in a ballpark doing operations. Good luck. I mean, our staff laughs every day. If I'm trying to like carry things or put up signs or do anything manual labor, I don't know. I have like three left hands. I just can't do anything. And so, when I first started out, and many people know this, the entrepreneurs listening, you do everything. And actually, I'm never going to tell people in the beginning not to do everything.
Sure. Because
that is where you learn. You learn about the business, and you also learn what you're good at and what you're bad at. So at some point, you need to go all in on your strengths. But yeah, I did everything in the beginning and failed miserably. Mm. And it wasn't until I started learning, you know what? This is what I'm the best at, being on the field, putting on the show, you know, pie and bids, high five, and having fun. Sure. That, and that's crazy. That's a job, but that's what I developed. It wasn't recently, and I posted something the other day about my energy list. And I really think this is something everybody should do, because I finally just put this down. It's like, what gives me energy every single day?
Yep.
And when I wrote that down, I was like, wow, when you do things that give you energy, you can do so many more great things because you're energized. You feel good. You want to make things happen. So I have 7 things that give me energy. And every day I make sure in my calendar, I have a good portion of those and less of the things that don't give me energy.
I love it.
I believe every day so many people are putting out fires because they are just running from thing to thing and they don't have a clear plan and they're intentional on doing things that give them energy and that they're the best at. And once you do that, your business will skyrocket because you're not doing the crap you're terrible at.
Yeah. Well, not to mention, I mean, when you're doing those energy fulfilling activities, your team is freed up to do those energy fulfilling activities. What if there's a team member that loves to do what you're not good at? And then you're energized, then they're energized because they picked that up. And that just flows down to your fans.
Here's a great example. So you're looking behind me. We're actually in the bowels of our stadium right now. Like literally this is like underneath our 1926 ballpark. But what you're doing is we set up a studio. I had obviously nothing to do with it because my hands could never do this. But our director of operations, I told him, I said, Jonathan, I'd really love to have a studio. We're doing tons of interviews. We're doing a live show. We're doing all this. Within a week, he has it all set up and he's like, what do you think? I go, are you kidding me? This is awesome. And Jonathan, if you put him down at a desk to try to do work, good luck. He's going to go crazy, but he loves fixing things and putting things together. There are some people that love numbers and want to do the finance. The key is find those people that get energized from it and don't try to do it. And it sounds so simple, yet so many people at the end of the day, they're exhausted. It's because they're doing the stuff they're not good at, they don't like, and it wears them down.
Huge, huge stuff. So I want to talk a little bit about the influences of Walt Disney, P.T. Barnum, Bill Veeck, all of these, you know, icons, and how that influenced your customer experience, your fans' experience, and then kind of how that's influenced just the entire game that you play every day. Yeah.
The reality is when I first took over the Gastoni team at 23 years old, I didn't like to read. I wasn't a big learner. I just got through school. You know, I would figure out how to get a good grade and just move on. But I was forced to. When I took over that job on the worst performing team in the country, I mean, with $268 in the bank account, I had no options. You know, it was so funny, Zach. There was a point where my roommate and I, because I had a roommate, I had an apartment paying $300 a month because I couldn't afford anything.
Sure.
And, we had a joke because he played a lot of video games. And he was like, how many points are you owed right now? And it got to be in like 4,000 points, 5,000 points, 6,000, because we didn't want to talk to it like dollars, because I didn't want to think I'm owed $10,000. It was like 9,000 points. That's how bad it was. But I realized the only way I was going to get paid to live is if I learned how to develop a better business.
Yeah.
So I became a sponge. And, you know, it's like, you know, it's, oh yeah, everyone knows they got to read more. But, you know, I just started reading everything I got my hands on. Mm. And so obviously I was obsessed with Bill Veeck first, because he was the most innovative baseball owner of his time in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And if people aren't familiar with him, he did things that were just, I mean, he let fans manage a game during a game. He actually was called Grandstand Manager's Night, a major league game. He let fans decide whether they should steal, hit, or bunt. It was unbelievable. Mm. He gave away 12 live lobsters to a fan during a game just to see what would happen. I mean, he obviously... He had Eddie Guidel, the midget, come up to a major league game and said, you cannot swing this bat. You better walk on 4 pitches. And, you know, he was so innovative. I learned from him. And then P.T. Barnum, you know, unbelievable on how he created attention, his showmanship. And, you know, a lot of things people challenge him on, he wasn't doing that were really true and honest. But the reality is he was just trying to put on a show for his customers. So I learned a lot from him. And then Walt Disney, one of the best books I've read by someone I got to know pretty well, Pat Williams, the founder of the Orlando Magic.
Okay.
How to Survive Walt, a brilliant business book. Everyone should read it, and just tells how he did his vision and how he failed, but how he moved on and how he responded to things. And I just read everything I could. And I think that's something, know what you want to be the best at and immerse yourself in that subject. So right now, Zach, I'm focusing all in on culture, because I believe the way our company is going to scale if we have the best, most amazing culture. So I'm not reading as much about the marketing and the attention. Now I'm in culture. So it's okay to shift. Just know where you're trying to go.
Sure. Man, that's exciting stuff. So there was one idea I think I heard on the Story Brand podcast. Not sure if it was in the book. I'm sure it was somewhere in there. But talk to me a little bit about the undercover fan experience and how, you know, is that a whole team thing? How that came to be for one? And can you explain it to our listeners? And then explain how you maybe implement some of that after you go through that.
Yeah. Well, I believe that if you want to create the best experience, you have to understand what the biggest friction points are for your customer. Mm-hmm. And you have to write them down, the mirror moment. So I was realizing like, all right, these are the things that are upsetting customers, but I've never lived it. We've never gone through it. So before last season, I turned to our staff and said, guys, what do you think if we all go undercover? And they're like, what do you mean? I'm like, you guys all become a fan for a night. And they're like, we don't have to work. I was like, well, yes and no. I go, I want you to have the whole experience. You know, we'll give you some money, come to the game and note and write details on everything. Mm. Now, from parking the car, to coming up to the stadium, to standing in line, to sitting, to watching the promotions, to leaving the game, experience everything. And so every night someone would go, our full-time staff or an intern would go and then give a full report and we'd videotaped everything. And then I did it. And as the guy in the yellow tuxedo to go missing for a game was sure is the guy. Yeah. And you know, I was wearing glasses and a hat. I went really incognito. But sure. It was amazing. I got like 10 pages of notes. Hmm. Because what I realized, I was like, oh, all right, our parking. Our parking can be a lot better. You know, we should have performers there. We should have some interesting things. The grass wasn't mowed. You know, these little details. And then I came in a little later on purpose. And I realized the players weren't there. The band wasn't playing. And because the players had to get ready for the game, it was game time. And the band was up on the, getting ready to play. So I realized, well, this is what we're saying we're delivering, but it's not there all the time. So now, how can we adjust all these things? So I noticed the lines, you know, were 8 minutes, which isn't bad, but it can be better. Anytime someone's waiting more than 5 minutes, we should have free samples going out with hors d'oeuvre, things like that. So these are the notes that I wrote. And, I think every company should do that. You know, put themselves in their customer's shoes. Go behind. If I'm gonna, even digitally, right? If I'm gonna buy, is this easy? Where's the phone number? How can I contact them easily? So many people hide the phone number. You know, or they don't have an address on their web. What? You know, it's details. So undercover fan, I think is something every company should try to do because it is a game changer for us. We have 30 pages of notes that we are fundamentally changing our experience because of that.
Man, it's so huge. Cool. So you kind of touch on a big fear of yours towards the end of the book, and it's talking about maybe, you know, becoming irrelevant, or, you know, one fan comes to this game, do they want to come again and experience the same thing? And can you touch on a little bit about, and you do in the book, but I'd like to, for our listeners, can you touch on how you're kind of addressing that fear of irrelevancy and kind of trying to innovate and do new things so that the fans, so that you do create those lifelong ranting, raving fans that keep coming back year after year. Mm.
A great book, Reinventors by Jason Jennings. And I forget the statistic. My team usually makes fun of me and say, Jesse, every statistic you say, you know, you completely make up. And I go, probably 90% of this. And it's it was dramatic. And I'm not going to try to make it up, but a huge percentage of companies that were in the top 50 are no longer there. And they keep dying. And you can look at the cemetery of the Blockbusters, Toys R Us's, Sears, and all that. Now, they're on top of their game, but they get complacent. And you look at the new restaurant that comes out, and you can't ever get a seat. And then 2 years later, they're shutting down. It happened. And because you rest on your laurels. And so, that is a fear of mine. We had unbelievable failure in the beginning where we couldn't sell a ticket to unbelievable, unprecedented success. And now, are we good with that? And the weird thing that we're battling right now is that all these good things that happen, we're taking them for granted, I worry. I worry it's like, oh, you know, like one of our fans' first director came to me yesterday. She's like, if you walked in and said, hey, we're on the Today Show tomorrow, we'd all be like, oh, that's good. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like that would be huge. But she's like, but it doesn't surprise us now because, you know, fortunately for us, you know, we're getting reached out to by LA producers and shows and all this, and it's blowing our mind, but it's becoming, you know, the typical. So. Yeah. You have to continue to tell stories. And for us, you know, we have to continue to figure out ways to create attention. And as I share in the book, you know, offering President Obama an internship with us, and it was crazy. Sure. And you know, obviously coming over there, Dolce and Banana underwear, and which doesn't make sense. You know, we're doing unique things every year. I'm playing in kilts last year, which, let's see, we have, there's one of the kilts right there.
Oh, nice.
That the players played in, which, you know, doesn't make sense. The first team ever to play in kilts. What's new this year? I always challenge our staff. I go, guys, what's new? What are people talking about? And I think every company needs to put themselves as a reporter. Think of themselves as a reporter. Does a reporter want to tell your story?
Mm.
And if people aren't reaching out to us to tell our story, then our story is not unique enough. It's not new. It's not fun. It's not crazy. And so that's what I'm challenging our staff. What's the story we're creating today?
Yeah.
And, we have idea paloozas. We come together. We talk about crazy ideas. You know, that's our new show, our weekly podcast. We literally have a bucket that we pull out, and myself and our president just talk about random ideas, like the Mananas, our man cheerleading team we're going to introduce this year. Just,
yes.
You know, ridiculous ideas, bringing on a team grandma that gives cookies out to the players, and like just things that don't make any sense, and having a mime coaching first base that can't get out of the first base box. I mean, these are the things we talk about, and we said, all right, we test them. We talk about them. Will people laugh? Like we proposed yesterday, should we do a shirts and skins game where the Bananas play with no shirts on and literally have body paint? And the fans are like, that is crazy. I'm like, good. We're creating some attention.
Perfect. Yes.
I don't know how that fits into anything you're doing or any of your listeners are doing, but it's fun for us. And I think that's what it's all about.
That's awesome. You know, and it's interesting. I think that there is always something that will resonate across. I mean, you know, obviously there's pieces that won't, but there, I think there's always pieces that always will at some level. And so regardless if you're talking about the banana underwear or the shirts and skins, I think everything is going to,
let's bring it back. What's your story? And you know, if you, before we talked live here, asked you about your story because everyone has a story. And I was fascinated by the challenges that you were going through from jumping from thing to thing.
Sure.
Scared. They're so afraid to share their story because they think it's about them. Here's the truth. When you share your story, it gives people permission to be able to talk about theirs and to be able to think about their next chapter. Every time I share a story, I hope people can come into it, resonate, and say, you know what? I'm going to create a better story for myself. I'm going to share my story. And so I think, you know, as crazy as our story is, I hope it gives people permission to share theirs and ask themselves, is my story worth telling? Is it worth actually talking about? And I think people, if it's not, then what's your next chapter? Maybe the first few chapters were pretty boring, but the next chapter is going to be really exciting. And I hope people will think about that.
Goodness gracious. That's incredible. So also in the book, you talk about a couple of tragedies that you guys have kind of helped fans with. And so I would love for you to touch on those, share with our listeners what those were and maybe how that created, you know, how you guys turned that into an experience for both the families that were affected, but also the fans and how that all came together.
Well, staying on the theme of stories, you know, I believe many companies have their core beliefs, their core values, you know, they have their mission, but the reality is it's the stories that actually share, does this company live their mission? Do they live their values? So we believe in story more than anything. And after every game, we share our fans' first moments. What are those stories that were created? And, you know, a few of the moments that were very touching, you know, obviously, you know, our opening night, I'll never forget where in the end of a game, you know, opening night, first night ever of the Savannah Bananas, it poured, of course. The game doesn't start until 9 o'clock. And I remember looking up and we sold out the game, and this was after all the challenge, my wife and I sleeping on the airbed, all the struggles, and we look up and not a fan had left. There were 4,000 people standing there in the rain, ready to watch our game.
Wow.
And I thought it was a special night already to begin with, but I'll never forget in the 7th inning, and we were getting killed. It was the worst game we could have ever played. We made like 6 errors, and our uniforms, we were wearing green uniforms because the bananas weren't yet ripe, so that was actually our whole theme, and they weren't ripe at all. So by the 7th inning, a young woman comes up to me and says, can you get me a signed baseball? And I said, yeah, you know, I'll do what I can, you know, fans first, I'll get her a signed baseball. And I go, but probably after the game, she's like, if you could get it now, it would mean the world to me. And I go, okay, I'll do my best. And she goes, I'm here upstaying in the metal bleachers, with my fiance's entire family. We were getting ready to get married and he came to every single opening night at the stadium, but he just tragically died a couple weeks ago.
Hmm.
Here in honor of him. And I said, yeah, I'm so sorry. Of course, I'll get you a signed baseball. And she goes, one more thing. She goes, his name was Drew Moody. And you have a player on your roster named Drew Moody. And I was like, oh, Jesus.
Whoa.
And Drew was still playing at the University of Georgia at the time. He was on our roster, but he wasn't there yet. But his younger brother, Logan Moody, was there. And so Logan was 18 years old, freshman. And so I go into the dugout. I tell Logan this. And he goes, I want to deliver the ball to you. So Logan goes up and delivers the ball to her and sits with her and her family for happening in the middle of the game, just talking to her, being there for her. And then I watch as he gives her a huge hug and he comes down. I go, Logan, you know, what was that? He goes, fans first, right? That's what it's about. And I was like, this 18-year-old who had been with us for 4 days understood, you know, it's not necessarily the things we do, but it's how we make people feel. Mm. And that is what the fans first experience is about. And I hope we created a special moment for her and her family. And, you know, we've had things like that that's happened every year, you know, and I could share a lot more of the stories about some tragedy that happened. But, you know, even just, you know, a gentleman, a season ticket holder came to me during a game, big guy, mustache, gives me a huge hug after the game. I go, whoa, whoa, what was that for? And he goes, you know, I love your games, but my mother, you know, and I haven't talked for years.
Mm.
We don't have a relationship. And, but she came to the first game and saw the players dancing and saw all the fun and the breakdancing first base coach. She had the time of her life. And now my mother and I sit together every single game. Your games brought the relationship back together for me.
Wow.
And I'm like, wow. And the reality is, you know, I know there's more moments like that. We've shared a lot of those stories, but because we talk about them over and over again, it gives our team, our people purpose. We're not just selling tickets. We're not just, you know, we're not just creating a circus at the ballpark.
Right.
We're bringing people together. We're making people feel like they belong. And personally, that's something that I've always wanted as, you know, someone came as an only child and my parents were divorced. My mother had a drug problem. I've always wanted to feel part of something and belong. Sure. The fact that we can do that every day at our ballpark and our people can feel that, there's nothing stronger. And I know that's what's going to carry our team to success. It's not all the antics. It's the understanding why we do what we do and how we make people feel.
Wow. I love that. Jesse, man, I so appreciate you sharing this and being on here. So let's transition to some kind of rapid fire wrap.
Rock and roll, man. Bring it. We got serious there. Let's have some fun here.
Let's go. So, okay. So what's one of your favorite challenges that, or failures that you've, you know, experienced, but it actually set you up for later success?
Greatest challenge and failure. I mean, it's crazy. The first thing I always think to is when we got the phone call 3 years ago that we ran out of money and literally overdrafted our account, had nothing left in my life, and I was sleeping on an airbed trying to make ends meet. You know, it's I'm going to answer that in a different way. And again, my whole mindset, whatever's normal, do the exact opposite.
Sure.
But good luck on these questions. I don't look at challenges and failures. I mean, to us, it's all discovery. So every day, I don't let that negative come into myself. It's, you know, no matter what things are going to happen, it's how you respond to them that matters. And so if you respond to things, this is a challenge, this is a failure, then all of a sudden you already have this mindset of, you know, you're behind. And sure. I never look at that. I mean, here's the reality. We had 3 years with zero voluntary turnover, and which is unbelievable. We have all millennials, you know, a millennial leaves a job every 13 months.
Sure.
This past 2 months, we've had 4 people go on to new great opportunities, and I'm so happy for them. It was the first time we've had a voluntary turnover. And not at one point, my wife and I, our president, were like, oh, what are we going to do? We lost our vice president, our director of finance, all this. What are we going to do? We're like, oh, this is supposed to happen. This is going to bring our core closer together. We're going to make great strides. We're going to have to do new things that we weren't doing before. We're going to have to innovate like we've never had to innovate before, because we're going to have to find a way. And there's two different kinds of people out there. There's problem finders and there's problem solvers.
Mm.
And I think there's so many people that focus on all the problems and all the challenges and the adversity. And those people say, you know what? This is an opportunity to solve a problem and have some fun. And that's how we look at it. So I completely did not answer your question, but I hope you can see where I'm coming from.
No, I absolutely love it. Do you have a quote that you live your life by or that kind of drives who you are?
My staff makes fun of me all the time because they just start like saying my ridiculous quotes. There's obviously a lot of things that I believe in, and I think, what are people's truths? What are the things that they absolutely believe in? But the thing that's changed for me recently, and that I put it on the back of our fans first playbook, is be patient in what you want for yourself, but be impatient in how much you give to others.
Mm.
That's running my life now, because every single day I start with gratitude. I started the thank you experiment back in 2016, writing a thank you letter every single day. I'm now over 1,000 thank you letters, but that's how I start my day because I realize if I can just share impact that someone's had on me, that will make them feel stronger. It'll make them have a better day and everything else will take care of itself. So I think so many of us are focused on our growth, our goals, our success. Focus on others and see what happens because that all gets taken care of.
Awesome. What advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
Run! This is a good one because I've processed this recently. Go all in on investing in yourself. So it wasn't until 2 years ago that I started actually putting money down to invest in myself. And what I mean by that is I read a lot of books, but you know that's nominal. Except, well, our finance director would disagree because I spent over $2,000 a year on books on Amazon. investing in masterminds, investing in conferences, investing in surrounding yourself with better people. And so I invested in getting help on my book. You know, I invest in, my speaking. I invest in all of this because it only will help you expedite your growth. So if I was 20 years old, if I had $500, I would say, how can I do half of that to spend on getting better and growing the people I'm around and growing where I'm learning from? Because that would have, I had to learn by doing. And that's the first 10 years in Gastonia, we failed so many times. That's how I was learning. But if I was around better people, more successful people, I would have expedited that even more. So don't be afraid to invest in yourself. Put a percentage of your salary to invest in going to conferences and reading and learning. That's what I do. And that's what I'm doing now. I'm investing a huge portion to get better.
Huge. So what's one key takeaway that our listeners can use, implement in regards to, you know, from our conversation or from your book or all of that in regards to enhancing their client's experience?
I could go the opposite way again. See, that's what I keep doing.
I love it.
I would say that your employees don't work for you. You work for your employees. And I wouldn't even call them the employees, your team members, your people. We always call them our people. Once you start focusing on loving them, caring for them, thinking about mapping the perfect experience for them, you have to show it to them before they can show it to your customers. Mm. And I think so many people first focus on their product, all right? And then they go to their customers, and then maybe they get to their employees.
Yeah.
The opposite route. Focus on employees, they'll take care of the customers, and the product will get better. And so I think that's where you shift that mindset, it changes everything.
Huge. Good stuff. So are there any exciting projects or new things that you have coming up or that you guys have coming up that you want to share with our listeners?
Sure. I'm sharing this with everyone. Okay. Everyone should have a vision of the future of where they're going, but not just a vision. They should have a dragon that they want to slay. This big problem that they're trying to go after. And yeah. I got that terminology from David Berkus. I spent some time with him at MMT. He says, you know, he's looking at writing a book about, you know, every company has to have this big dragon they're trying to slay. And ours is changing the game of baseball. And I'm telling every single person, this is what we're going to do. Similar to Gary Vaynerchuk telling every single person he's going to buy the New York Jets. Yeah. Gary Vaynerchuk will buy the New York Jets.
Right.
Because he's been telling everyone for like years. Like it's yeah. in his, like, he can't even imagine not doing that. And here's the reality. I can't imagine not changing the game of baseball. Mm. And it's not just making it fun and having the chance. It's actually dramatically changing the way the game is played to make it more fun, more entertaining, faster. The game has not changed in over 100 years. If anything, it changed to get slower and longer and less entertaining. In the next 2 years, we're going to make a big announcement, and we are going to dramatically change the game and hopefully create the most fun, exciting baseball game there ever been. That's
what. Boom. I love it. So how can our listeners follow that journey, keep up with you, kind of engage with your fan base, all that type of stuff?
Yeah, just, I mean, I post every day. I'm sharing the journey, as you know, and I can't thank you enough for liking. Just, I mean, I'm like, oh, I feel good. Zach's throwing me the likes every day. I post every day on LinkedIn, Facebook. I have my own podcast business done differently. But again, I'm documenting the journey, sharing anything I learn, I'm talking about. And feel free to reach out. I'll never forget when I was 25 years old, I shot an email to Mark Cuban about, because I was going through challenges at crossroads. He wrote back within an hour. And I was like, this is Mark Cuban writing back. Wow. So I tell anyone, feel free to reach out, shoot me a note, and I'll help in any way. You reached out, and I was excited, inspired to follow you, and I'm glad we could connect today.
I appreciate that. And thank you so much for your time. Obviously, it's clear that you're client experience, your fan experience is insane. Your team is insane. Focusing on the culture, your whole journey is incredible to follow. And I'm so thankful for you letting me share your story to our listeners. And it's just been incredible. So thank you.
No, thank you so much. And I hope you and everyone else will keep sharing their story, because that's what really inspires people.
Awesome.
Thanks, man. Thank you for listening in on another episode of the Client Experience Architect podcast. As always, we'd love to get your feedback, what you thought about the content, if you pulled out any nuggets to implement, things like that. You can also head over to clientexperiencearchitect.com to find the show notes and a place to leave some feedback. Please let us know what you'd like to hear more of, and if you liked the show, we'd appreciate you sharing it with others and leaving a review on iTunes. Doing that will help more people gain key insights as well. And remember, if you're going to have fans, why not make them raving? And with that, I appreciate you and thank you for listening. Have an awesome day.